The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Yes, Kamala or Kamala in the race. Is it Kamala or Kamala? I guess it's people are settling on Kamala. But yep, the savior of the democratic process. Well, maybe not that, right? But certainly maybe the savior of the Democratic Party. That is for sure. She was out on the campaign trail yesterday. You talk about that, many other things this morning, but join the conversation at 770-563-3770-KMED. A lot of people are starting to dig more into Kamala's background here. And yesterday, we kind of know how this campaign is going to be spelled out for you. It's going to be the prosecutor against the felon versus the felon. At least that's where it's coming from in Kamala's side about this. And actually, some interesting information starting to surface about what her real economic, especially the economic view of the world is. And I'm kind of the mindset that the Democratic Party, and especially under Kamala Harris, would be bankrupting and going insolvent really, really, really fast. And with Republicans in control under Trump, it would be just kind of at medium speed. You know, that's because there really is no, I mean, there is just no constituency to actually be disciplined and rein in spending. There just isn't. And, you know, this is something that Herman Berchiger and I have talked about for some time over the years. We're undisciplined people. Frankly, as a rule, I think we've been corrupted by services. I really do. I've come to that conclusion. And what kind of put the cherry on the sundae for me the other day was hearing about the battles for this stupid OSU extension budget in Joe County and the, you know, whether we're going to pay for more woke 4-H, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the county commission ends up saying no to that, rightly so. They were good to have done that, smart to have done that. I'm just hoping that Josephine County, and I wish Jackson County could go in that direction too, and quit funding woke OSU university programs. But then Herman tells me, yeah, I get somebody who calls me up and says, without the extension service, who's going to inspect my pressure cooker? It's like, yeah, I mean, that is just illustrative of everything that is wrong with the United States of America. How did the Republic ever function without an OSU extension service individual at taxpayer expense being around there to inspect your private pressure cooker? You know? But yet, this is what we expect. You're paying taxes, and so you're expecting services. That's the other thing. Look at how the media even conditions you. Services. Needed services. And, oh, what's the other thing? Resources. Services. Resources. Services. Resources. You know, it just makes my eyes glaze over sometime. We could talk about that if you want. Speaking of services and resources, I was watching KOBI 5 last night, trying to catch up on some of the stories. I've been busy doing some other things. And it reminds me, well, at first I'll tell you what got me interested in this. John Kubik writes me overnight and says, Bill, Jackson County Scanner on Facebook has an interesting thread regarding the school resource. Even then, I hate that name, school resource officer. No, it's a cop. It's a school police officer, okay? I get tired of calling, well, no, we don't have perverts. They're sex offenders or they're minor attracted people rather than being perverts. You know, an SRO, it's not, you know, school resource officer. It's a police officer. Why can't we call stuff what it really is? But anyway, on the Scanner page, Facebook has an interesting thread regarding the school resource officer at South Medford High. We need to get information out into the public square. Thank you. Well, John, let's make sure that we understand Facebook is the world's biggest CB radio. There's really not a whole lot of heft. I mean, sometimes, yeah, you get some really good news out of something like that. But the Scanner page is not necessarily monitored all the time. And so you have people just barking out stuff that they don't really know about. Although there has been some good information, too. Don't get me wrong. But you have to sift through a lot of the chaff. And here's the deal. And Medford School District ended up putting out a release about this one, and Medford Police, for that matter, too. And there are some rumors here. Now, a joint statement released yesterday, Medford Police Department Chief Ivins and Superintendent Brett Champion are saying that all of this news about Officer Josh Doney, I guess he's been the school resource officer there for some time, and he was transferred from being the school resource officer, in other words, the school police officer, and he's been transferred back into patrol, and they've been circulating online. And the rumors, and I don't know, I'm assuming that some of these rumors were probably on the scanner pages. I don't really keep up with the scanner pages, but because like I said, it's, you know, I'll read stuff on the scanner pages that will say, that will blather nonsense, such as, well, someone comes on my property and tries to steal my stuff. I'm just going to shoot him dead in my front yard. I'm thinking, yep, and you're going to be up for murder. You know, and nothing happens to it. It just kind of blows out there and people go, yeah, me too. So consider the source. You know, it's a big CB radio. There are some useful aspects of it, but, you know, the rumors anyway about Officer Doney, was that he was voicing safety concerns about the district and the police department didn't want to address them. That was the rumor. That's the rumor that spread all over Facebook. Just not true. And both Medford School District and Medford Police coming out there and saying, they make all these decisions based on the security of students, staff, and the local community. Now, Medford has the longest-standing SRO program in the state, as well as a recent expansion to include several school marshals rotating throughout the elementary schools. Here's the key. It's common procedure for officers to be transferred to other areas within the department. In other words, they rotate them around. And then Officer Doney's reassignment was not disciplinary. So it wasn't a punishment. So a new SRO, new school resource officer, has been assigned to South Medford High School with an official announcement to come soon. So anyway, there we go. And like I said, we can all sit around there and shoot the breeze with one another and try to share some information, but it is amazing what kind of stuff ends up spreading on some of the groups. That's all. And just kind of calm down, all right? Calm down. 770-563-3770-KMED. Josephine County has some commission candidates that are going to be chosen today. I guess it's going to be chosen today at some point. Appointee being sworn in by 1 o'clock. So this morning's meeting at 9:30, or is it 9 or 9:30? One way or the other, when they have their weekly meeting. We're going to have Bertschiger, John West, and Herman Bertschiger, both commissioners, choosing who's going to be the interim to fill in for Dan DeYoung, who resigned. We know about that story. We've been talking about that for a number of weeks. So 11 people had applied. The finalists, Andreas Bleck, Ronald Goodpasture, Catherine Means. According to the Daily Courier, Bleck, former chair of the Grants Pass Advisory Board and a member of the County Charter Review Committee, he owns Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel. Goodpasture, retired Josephine County Sheriff's Deputy, supervisor of the county's detective team, joined the sheriff's office in 1973, ran for sheriff in 02, transitioned to part-time in 2003. So he's involved in law enforcement. And Means, a registered nurse with a history of breeding miniature schnauzers. Of course, the Daily Courier has to always get their little digs in. She has connections to West. She and her husband bought a home in 2021 in a subdivision developed by West. Oh, my goodness. And so did probably a bunch of other people. But, you know, that's how it goes. It's like, okay, where's the angle? Where can we twist a knife here, I suppose? But anyway, we'll find out who the interim is. And I would imagine a lot of times the interims weren't running for the office, right? So they're not involved. It's a good thing that they did not choose anybody who is actually running for the office right now. So that way they let the political process play out, okay? There was a meeting in Jackson County about jail funding. KOBI 5 had a bit of information on that. I'll share some of that. And about proposed jail funding, they did a survey of 400. I don't know, is 400 a lot out of 220,000 or whatever it is to try to gauge the temperature? I don't know. We'll share a little bit about that. Maybe I can call up Commissioner Roberts about it and get the overall take. But Jail funding seems to be, according to the surveys, about split. Close to a 50-50 thing. And I know last time that they put jail funding in front of the voters in Jackson County, it went down in flames, 70% no and 30% yes. And according to this study, they're a little more open to it now, probably because of all the dirtbaggy homelessness and inability to deal with things. But I loved one part of the survey because I was watching this on KOBI, and they were talking about how, Ashland and females and Democrats would really like it if we had something which was involved more with treating things in it. And it wasn't necessarily a custodial thing. So, yeah, in other words, Ashland will vote for a jail if you actually have part of it that's not really a jail and fighting crime. As long as it's involving with treatment, you know, because we know that that being a criminal is just a disease. And if you have the right kind of treatment, then you'll be able to solve that disease. If only it were true, Ashland. But, oh, man, I got to love the soft, mushy left when it comes to certain matters. But how's your day going? It's 22 after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED at 99.3 KBXG, the jukebox.
If you're looking to be more efficient and functional on a job site, release the hounds. Two Dogs Fabricating is Southern Oregon's exclusive North Star flatbed dealer. And if they don't have the perfect flatbed, Two Dogs will build one made to your exact specifications. Plus, come kick the tires on a great selection of heavy-duty Delco trailers and North Star-made Iron Bull trailers in multiple lengths with dump and tilt options. Two Dogs has light-duty North Star trailers too. Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way off Sage in Medford and at twodogsfab.com.
We Built This City by Jefferson Starship was released in 1985 and quickly reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100. And while their city was built on rock and roll, Millett Construction wants to remind you that your home was built on ordinary earth that tends to shift over time. So before you get knee-deep in a hoopla of sloping floors and cracked walls, ask yourself, do you remember? Yes! Call Millett Construction for a free inspection and estimate to fix your foundation. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
We built this city.
Getting quality employees to fill positions in your company is essential. But finding those people can be a major hassle. Unless you use ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality people a breeze. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. With ZipRecruiter, one click sends your job to hundreds of top job sites. But more than that, ZipRecruiter's advanced technology identifies the candidates with the skills you need, sends you a list of great matches to review, then actively invites them to apply for your job. And the results speak for themselves. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's right, the first day. Now you can focus on your business and let ZipRecruiter do the work finding the best people for you. See for yourself. Experience the ease, efficiency, and power of ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
The Medford Rogues enter the last week of the regular season with 6 home games Tuesday through Sunday. This Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, catch the Rogues as they take Petaluma's AE Express. Tuesday is Chick-fil-A night. 15 and under are free, and general admission is half price. Wednesday is all-you-can-eat hot dogs for Rogue Credit Union members, and Thirsty Thursday features free thermochromic water bottles courtesy of Rogue Credit Union. Gates open at 5:45, first pitch at 6:35. Visit MedfordRogues.com for tickets.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Pacific Service Supply, and I'm on KMED.
25 minutes after 6. Join in at 770-5633. By the way, Eric Peters, Wheels Up Wednesday. We're going to kick that off here in about 10 minutes. Always a good conversation. And we're going to talk about the EV mandates that Trump says he's going to eliminate when he's elected, like day one, which I think would be absolutely wonderful. Eric, though, says that it's not enough, and I would agree with him on that. And it's time, if you're going to get a populist, make America a great president back into office, you really have to take not just a weed whacker. I think you're going to have to take a billy goat, you know, those billy goat machines to all of the vines in the jungle known as the administrative state. It really needs to be reined in. It's, you know, just getting rid of the Chevron deference is not enough, too. And I don't know if Trump is up to that. I don't know if any one president is up to that. You'd need a lot of people wanting to go in there. But one of my concerns is I know that they fired Cheadle yesterday. You know about that. We ended up talking about that. Secret Service head ended up falling on her sword. It's going to be an interim in there. But now that we're in the hotness of the, well, now we have Kamala. And that's going to be Kamala, Trump. You know, there are going to be debates and things like that. And I wonder if we're really ever going to get to the bottom of the assassination attempt. And I have my doubts about that, because normally when you have these committees, this is where truth goes to die. And maybe it's by design. I don't know. It's not Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but I've read a lot of people with good thinking that many I agree with, many I don't. But there was one in particular that I was reading this morning on LouRockwell.com. It was John Leakey, and he does a Substack called Courageous Discourse. And they'll kind of go through things which are rather uncomfortable, you know, kind of raise uncomfortable truths and bring up some stories that, frankly, I'd forgotten about. And I want to share a little bit of John Leakey's latest here. And it's entitled Tear Up Texas. FBI encouraged a 2015 shooting and did nothing to stop it. And I had completely forgotten about this particular story, but let me just share a little bit of it. Well, John writes this morning, the most plausible hypothesis for the July 13th assassination attempt in Butler is that Thomas Matthew Crooks was already on the radar of the Secret Service, Department of Homeland Security, or the FBI in the days before he went to the event with his rifle. Most likely, he indulged in online chatter with others whose true identity he himself did not know. In the course of this chatter, and remember, he was online in, he had numerous, secured app online conversations for like gaming platforms, very violent video game platforms, that sort of thing. John continues, most likely he indulged in this chatter he didn't know, with people he didn't know. And in the course of this chatter, he identified himself as being passionately interested in shooting rifles, frequently practiced firing his rifle at a range, a representation that could be easily verified. A good investigator would also examine the hypothesis that he somehow, probably in veiled language, indicated he was interested in shooting Donald Trump. Leakey writes, instead of discouraging this fantasy, someone on the other side of the chat encouraged it and encouraged him to attend the scheduled rally in Butler to take a shot at Trump. Again, the language was probably veiled, something along the lines of, hey, I hear there'll be a nice shooting range at the Butler showgrounds this Saturday between the American Glass Research Building and the stage. Contemplating this hypothesis reminded me of the Curtis Caldwell Center attack in Garland, Texas, May 3rd of 2015. And he goes into this, folks, and I had completely forgotten about this because there have just been so much noise that we have to roll through over the years. But what happened with that, the people who wanted to attack the Caldwell Center in Garland had been monitored by the FBI for years. For years. As they were suspected of consorting with Islamic terrorists and probably planning a terrorist attack on American soil. Now, the would-be shooters who lived in Phoenix, Arizona, thought that they were exchanging text messages with fellow Islamic terrorists. But in fact, they were actually texting with an undercover FBI agent who encouraged them to attack an event scheduled at the Curtis Caldwell Center. As the agent memorably put up in his text message, "Tear up Texas." That's what he told the Islamic terrorist that he was corresponding with. So we got the two Islamic perps then. They loaded up their car in Phoenix and hit the road to Arlington. And again, unknown to them, they were being tracked the entire time. See, this is something I've been criticizing for a long time, by the way. You know, it's one of those things where the FBI grooms terrorists and then swoops in to stop terrorism and says, hey, look, increase our budget. Look what we need. Give us a new FBI. Give us a new FBI center as they sweep up January 6th demonstrators, too, for that matter. But anyway, on the day of the convention, the Islamic perps end up parking by the Curtis Caldwell Center. They got out of the car with their ARs, their weapons, and they walked toward the entrance. And the FBI undercover agent was right behind them. So he's following them, not stopping them, but following them, right? And while the undercover agent did nothing to stop it, there was a local security guard there, saw the armed dirtbags coming, and then he pulled out his sidearm and he shot him, neutralized them before they could get into the convention center with their semi-automatic rifles. And they had a whole bunch of loaded magazines, too. Had the security guard not intervened, nobody knows how many people in that building would have been shot. And not long after the incident, it was discovered that the undercover FBI agents had encouraged the shooters, followed them to the event, and done nothing to intervene. The security guard, who was shot and wounded but survived his injury, sued the FBI and Department of Justice, which, of course, escaped liability when their declaration of sovereign immunity, I'll put that in scary air quotes, was upheld in court. So John Leakey's writing that, and, you know, and I had completely forgotten about that. Like I said, there's been so many stories of corruption over the years. Is it beyond the pale that we could have been witnessing something like that with the Trump assassination attempt? Because, you know, when you have people within the so-called deep state, which is just the administrative state, the people who aren't elected, the people who are lifers, the people who don't care who the president is because we're going to do what we want because, hey, we have the real levers of power in the various administrative agencies. When they consider themselves that they're dealing with literal Hitler, many of them from the left, literal Hitler, someone who's going to destroy something, whether it's Dick Cheney or, you know, someone else. Dick Cheney hates him, you know, maybe, you know, who knows? Can you really put it past them? How can you put it past the system? And so I really wonder if we're really ever going to get to the bottom of it. But anyway, it's a great story, great article on Courageous Discourse on Substack. I do subscribe to that, too, but it was highlighted in Lou Rockwell today. And I thought it was pretty thought-provoking. And yeah, I had forgotten about, once again, the FBIers would, you know, groom the terrorist, pretend to stop it, in this case, not stop it. And then even when they try to sue over it, oh, we're sovereign immunity. Yes, we're just more important than you, you mere people who pay the taxes, being the tax mules for us. This is the Bill Myers Show, Newstalk 106.3 KMED, 99.3 KBXG. I don't know if I want to take this call. We'll see if it's a good call or not, but hopefully before we get to Eric, it's a good call. Morning, who's this?
Good morning, Bill. It's Tom here.
Okay, all right. It'd be a reasonable call. Not a raving lunatic, at least.
I'll do my best. You know, one of the things that corroborates what you're saying is that when the shooting happened at the Trump rally there, the sniper apparently was killed within seconds when the shooting started. And the only way that could happen is if the whoever the government sniper was had Thomas in his sights.
Well, reportedly, they were already suspicious of this. I mean, it's just a whole mess. And I know that we could, Tom, actually, you know, go to Occam's razor once again. What's the simplest way of looking at this? Okay, you got a bunch of incompetent nincompoops in charge. And there's certainly a lot of evidence of that, especially in FedGov and in especially as we go with more woke DEI hires in various other places. But when you're looking at something so obvious that that even attendees at the rally are saying, hey, he's up there, and nothing gets done. They knew about this guy for about 30 minutes to an hour in some cases, some reports are saying before. And it starts looking a little more kind of let it happen sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's you know, you can use the incompetence excuse only so far, but it's so over the top. And when that was my first reaction, it's either gross incompetence or they allowed it to happen. And
often you're not wrong to actually go to incompetence first, but it is such a it's such a gross dereliction on so many levels. And even when you have the local police that were suspicious about this, and they were talking about a suspicious person there that they were concerned about, who ended up being the shooter. They even talked about it on one of the local Butler police. He's either police or sheriff. Forget. It was on his cam the other day, and that finally got released. And this is the guy. This is the guy we were looking at or looking for, right? You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they let him go on stage. I'm talking about Trump. They knew they had a problem within the system, and nobody delayed it or shut it down. You know,
I think what's happened here, you know, when it first happened, you know, we didn't have very many details, but as the details came out, and as you say, there was a serial incompetence, one after the other, after the other, after the other.
And maybe just the incompetence holes in the Swiss cheese finally just lined up, you know, to make that happen, but I don't know.
It's unlikely.
I have my doubts. I have my doubts that so many people in so many situations could be that incompetent that no one was able to stop that. It's not passing the smell test. That's all. And I don't like saying that. I really don't. But we have a history, though, of the FBI, and like we said over in Garland, just letting it happen and actually having directed it. So how do we know there wasn't something? Would we ever know? And like I said, the truth is going to die in whatever commission that that Congress is setting up to make this happen.
The main thing we can hope is that Trump doesn't die in the process.
Agreed.
Yehus will come back again, and I sincerely, you know, that's not a way to have political discourse in America.
Indeed, it is not. But it is something which has been gone down in history as very effective political violence. Just a sad fact of history. 6:37, we'll catch up on news. Eric Peters joins me. We'll talk the open road, and we'll take a little break from that. Some politics, too.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is the Rogue Valley's spray-on bedliner leader for 20 years running. We're excited to upgrade our spray-on bedliner product to MilSpec and join the fast-growing nationwide network of dealers. Our new MilSpec bedliners are backed by a nationwide lifetime warranty and feature the latest innovations in spray-on bedliner technology. Stop by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority and let our seasoned team of professionals give your truck the protection it needs with a MilSpec spray-on bedliner.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Medford Police and the Medford School District issued a joint statement saying social rumors about a school resource officer's reassignment being retaliatory are untrue. Rumors suggest Officer Josh Doney was reassigned because he questioned allowing students who were expelled for bringing guns to school back into the district sooner than district guidelines allow. While Medford PD says reassignments are common, they also say they can't discuss personnel matters publicly. Federal emergency money is coming to Oregon for the Durkee Fire burning between Ontario and Baker City. It's 240,000 acres and 0% contained. The fire has forced closures of I-84 and threatens power infrastructure. As dozens of fires burn across the state, firefighters are getting little help from the weather. Nearly all of the state hasn't seen substantial rainfall in at least 45 days. Temperatures are expected to cool slightly this week, but will be windy east of the Cascades. I'm Bill London, KMED News.
Life's busy, and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
Did you know that with Good Guys Guns Background Concierge Service, customers get approved the same day? And for under 21-year-old customers, Good Guys Guns at 4934 Crater Lake Avenue gets you approved in half the time of the big box stores. That's right, Good Guys Background Concierge Service gets you your firearm faster than the other guys. And this service is free with every firearm purchase. Good Guys Guns, the Valley's firearm leader, 4934 Crater Lake Avenue. Good Guys Guns.
Good Guys Guns.
Joel here with another Butler money-saving truck deal. Get $4,300 in Ford rebate, get another $1,000 in Ford trade assistance cash, plus $900 in Ford finance cash, and I'll tack on a $3,800 Butler Ford discount for a total savings of $10,000 off a 2024 Ford F-150 4x4 crew cab, or buy a new 2024 Ford Bronco Sport for less than $27,000 when you have a qualifying competitor SUV. Also, I've got low interest rates, well, on everything. Edges, Escapes, certified pre-owned Explorers, Broncos, you name it. Butler says yes to $10,000 off on trucks. Butler says yes to saving thousands on Ford Broncos. Butler says yes to low interest rates. And Butler says yes for more for your trade. Butler Ford and Truck Center, rated number one Ford store in Oregon by Google. Just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where we've got the selection you desire and the guest experience you require.
36 monthly lease payments at 7,500 miles per year with 7,500 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, saddle, and 250 dealer down fee with vehicle cap cost of $42,884. 72 monthly payments of $15.15 per thousand finance. All financing on approved credit.
The Bill Myers Show is on 106.3 KMET.
Midnight Oil, Dream World in the bumper rotation here, which is a perfect introduction to, well, our conversation. Our Dream World of Out on the Open Road, Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters is automotive journalist and genius and talks politics, cars, and reviews and so much more. And I would dare say philosophy, kind of a philosophy there too at epautos.com. Eric, welcome back. Always good talking
Thanks,
with you.
Thanks, Bill. Very much so. Have you got your popcorn ready for tonight's John Gill speech?
It's
maybe we should explain that reference.
Go ahead, please. Please do.
Sure. For fans who might remember, there's an episode in the old original Star Trek series where one of the members of the Federation has become the Führer of a planet, and it turns out that he's a drugged up, senile old puppet that they have to prop in front of the TV to give a speech, and that's essentially what we're going to be seeing this evening, I think.
Yeah, of course. I wonder if he's going to be wheeled out like what was that the pilot of the old Star Trek one, which had
remember
the guy the captain that was
captain
injured
Pike, the original captain of the Enterprise.
Right. He comes out. They have him in the strapped to the wheelchair, and he's got, and all they can do is answer yes or no with the light bulbs. You know, it's just. Oh, man, I haven't thought about that in years, but, well, I suppose. Well, we'll be looking at the animatronic presidential bear this afternoon, I guess. I don't know. 5 o'clock
it's
our
so
time.
It's so strange, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Indeed it is.
Who knows what to make of it, and they just keep throwing stuff at us, which is probably deliberate because it helps to keep us off balance.
I think you're right about that, and I was mentioning on social media last night that it's such an interesting time that we're living in where every time I'm looking at the news and the feeds and everything else, I'm just reminded that it feels like directed history. You know, nothing is organic. Very little is just a naturally occurring event. And so much of our national, especially when it comes to political news, completely choreographed and just managed for effect is what it feels like. And And I have a feeling that everybody else is, a lot of other folks are in that same kind of that same kind of mode, which is uncomfortable to say the least. And I think you're right. You know, it's keeping people off off kilter on this one. I wanted to touch on a story which I thought was really good. It had to do about with Trump and the EV, because Trump has made it very clear that if he's elected, one of the first things he's going to do day one is to get rid of the electric vehicle mandate. It's not that to get rid of electric vehicles, because they have a role in the transportation world. And even he admits this, but it's a matter about saying that this is the only thing you get, right?
Yeah, he is going to try to do something about the regulations that are serving as a de facto ban on vehicles that aren't minimally hybrids and eventually will have to be only electric exclusively in order to comply with the regs. That's what he's talking about. And I think that that's a good start. Problem is, it's not enough, because the auto industry now has backed itself into what I like to call a compliance corner.
Yeah.
For decades now, they have decided that it's better to go along to get along, and they've planned their products accordingly. And the product planning cycle is typically about 4 years or so. And what I mean by that is the vehicles that are going to be available, say, come about 2028, are right now being developed. That's how long it takes for them to do that.
So, and the ones that are being developed right now are mostly EV, right?
Sure, and they've made this huge commitment to it. So now, are they going to risk losing literally everything, probably, by going back to what they've already rejected, stop investing in these electric vehicles on the hope that Trump is going to do something, and even if he does do something, but then the worry is, come the next presidential election, we get another Biden or a Harris or a Newsom or whoever it is.
And then you're right back to where you were, right?
Right back in, exactly. Yeah. They're, you know, it's an impossible position for them. And really, I think the only long-term solution is to dismantle the federal regulatory apparatus itself, to pull the teeth of its ability to continue to function as a de facto legislature.
Now, what was the origin? I should know this, really, but I had never really thought more deeply about it. What was the origin of the federal government deciding that somehow there was constitutional authority for it to dictate what your car did in the first place. And I'm talking about, now I would imagine when it comes to the emissions, the pollution aspect of it, probably the original creation of the EPA, I would imagine. Yep. But you know, there's so many other aspects of automotive technology are completely controlled by Fed regulation in one form or another. What is the root of it? Is there a route to strike at, or are there multiple routes?
Well, the main route is, of course, the EPA, and then legislation such as the original Energy Policy Conservation Act, which appeared right around the same time, which essentially conveyed this broad general authority on the EPA to do things like tell the auto manufacturers how many miles per gallon that their vehicles will be allowed to get. And if they don't get it, then they're going to get fined, and then we get to pay the cost for that, which we've been paying now for 50-something years. So that's the premise that I think needs to be rejected, and I think it's important for people to reflect on the fact that it's silly to think we wouldn't have fuel-efficient cars if it weren't for the government, because fuel, you know, economical cars are desirable, and if there's a desire for something, the market's going to provide it. You know, this insolent idea that the government knows best has got to be challenged, and more to the point, it's nobody else's business, really, what the gas mileage of your car that you paid for is, because you're the one who paid for it, and you're the one who put the gas into the car.
If you are living in a free country, but obviously when it comes to automotive technology, we don't live in a free country because everything has been designed by government mandates in one form or the other. Because and some of them are working at cross purposes with one another.
I was just going to get into that. There's to borrow a word of the left, there's an intersectionality that's going on. Because on the one hand, you've got these fuel economy mandates that keep going up and up and up. And on the other hand, you've got all of these safety mandates that keep pushing the weight of vehicles up and up and up, such that now you've got heavy, not particularly efficient, and very expensive vehicles. And it's absolutely outrageous. You know, if you went back to the days before the government got involved in this stuff, you could buy cars that weighed less than 2,000 pounds and that got 40 miles per gallon. And you can't buy any car like that anymore, at least not in this country.
I remember, well, like I said, I'm still, for fun, I drive that 82 Vanagon diesel, which was, and the only reason they shoved the diesel in there was because of that gas crisis at that time. That's when they were putting, like, the diesels in the Cadillacs and the Oldsmobiles and everything like that. You remember that. You were horrible.
Yep.
And,
yep.
But the thing is, the Rabbit diesel in 1982, if I recall correctly, got 55 miles gallon on the highway. 55 then. No, now, of course, it didn't really have any pollution controls on it, whatever. And I guess by today's standards, it would be considered a much dirtier vehicle. But you were able to do it. And, in fact, my mom had a diesel Rabbit there for a while. It was a great little car. It was not fast, of course, but it was light. And you were able to just drive that forever. In fact, I think it was like 600-700 miles you could get on a tank on that. So all this talk about fuel economy, well, fuel economy comes from having something light.
Correct. And we can get a sense, a window into what we might have had, because we did have it for a while until about 2015. You may recall the Volkswagen diesels of that era that were available, and they were certainly clean by any objective standard having to do with meaningful pollution. And those things could get more than 50 miles per gallon. And that was with the weight that they had. If you can imagine what they would have gotten if they had been, say, 500 or 800 pounds lighter, which they could be if there weren't for all of these safety requirements, you'd probably be looking at a vehicle that got 60, 65 miles per gallon.
I recall Honda CRXs from the 1980s, or is it CRX, or what was the one that had
CRX HF, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, HF. It was the little car that looked like it had its backside kicked in, right? You know, that kind of thing. It was a little roller skate of a car, and it got, more than 50 miles per gallon on a regular gas vehicle, and I think it was carbureted. A carburetor.
The initial ones were carbureted, exactly. No high technology needed, just lightweight. Not much rolling resistance. If I remember correctly, it had 14-inch steel wheels, just a simple, light car. Now, if you extrapolate that to our era and, you know, add in all of the technological advancements that have occurred in the meanwhile, but keep the weight down, that vehicle would be getting 60-plus miles per gallon without question.
I know. Yeah. Could you imagine taking a good Honda, maybe even just a 1.2, three-cylinder Honda, put a CVT on it, and then throw it in a body, you know, back then that it was that light? You would get astounding mileage out of it, and it would still be clean. But they all say that, hey, everything has to be able to be smashed by a semi-truck and survivable no matter what, right?
You know, that kind of thing. And even that is fatuous because, as you and I have talked about before, let's say, just to pull something out of the hat, I were to go out and buy a 2010 model Mercedes S-Class, which, of course, is their top-of-the-line full-size sedan.
Right.
It's not considered safe by the standards of 2024, an S-Class Mercedes.
Because it wouldn't pass the modern or the 14-year later
regulation. Whatever the latest ridiculous pedantic standards are, exactly.
And so this is what has gotten us to the point where I think the average General Motors transaction, I was just reading this in a financial journal the other day, the average vehicle transaction now is now $50,000. Now, I know there's been a lot of inflation there, too, but there's been a lot of inflation beyond just the inflation in auto costs when it comes down to
it. And, of course, it's not just the cost of the cars. As everybody is aware now, it's also the cost of insuring the car, which has exploded precisely because the cars are so much more expensive now to replace and to repair if they're damaged. You know, it's this horrible feedback loop that is making vehicles increasingly unaffordable for the majority of people, which, of course, I believe is exactly what the plan is.
And the root of it, though, is the regulatory state in the federal government. And Trump, of course, talking about the EV mandate, you're right. He needs to go, if he wins this election, he needs to go way beyond that if we're going to be able to have affordable transportation for the masses. If that's really what the plan is, to have affordable transportation for the masses, that's not a bus. There we go.
Yep. I think this is our last opportunity. If Trump does not do that, it's over. And the only recourse that you and I and other regular people will have is to cling to our older vehicles until they literally come to try to take them out of our hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might want to invest in car parts manufacturers, okay? That's what I'm thinking of, all right? Let's talk about some of the stuff you've been driving. And you had the last Camaro in your driveway?
Last Camaro. A really bittersweet moment for me because I'm a big Camaro fan, and over my life I've owned five Camaros in addition to the two Trans Ams that I have owned. So it's very, very sad to me to see this car go because it's not going for any good reason. It's going, once again, because the regulatory apparatus has made selling cars like that cost prohibitive, which reduces the number of people who can afford to buy it, which reduces the justification to make it. And, of course, then there's the political consideration with regard to GM, which has committed to this electrification agenda, and a car like that just doesn't fit in align with their current political direction. And that leaves the Mustang as the last man standing, and it's just tragic that this is happening.
So you actually talk about this in the Mustang GT text. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, so, you know, now that the Camaro is gone and now that the Challenger is gone, there's no competition left for the Mustang. It's the last car of its type that you'll still be able to buy going forward. So, surprise, surprise, Ford has increased the price of the car by several thousand dollars. And to be a little bit more precise about it, it's the cost of the V8-powered GT. And that's not so much profiteering. Actually, it has to do with the same issue that we've been talking about, compliance. The V8 version of the Mustang obviously doesn't get particularly good gas mileage, so there's an incentive for Ford to produce fewer of them, or rather to sell fewer of them. So they increase the price for just that paradoxical purpose. But they have to keep it in the lineup because if it's not at least available hypothetically, if let's say the Mustang became a four-cylinder automatic-only car, it's no longer a Mustang. I mean, some people might like it, but it loses that halo that it has, and then there's no point in having a Mustang.
So this would be – the Mustang will be really the final pony car in the entire country right now, really?
It already is. And, you know, the same reasons that are driving the V8 out of the engine bay are ultimately going to drive the four-cylinder turbo that's the standard engine out of the car, too, because while it gets superb gas mileage, 33 miles per gallon on the highway, which is very impressive for a sporty performance car like that, it's nowhere near the 50.4 mile per gallon average that has been decreed by the regulatory apparatus that's going to be mandatory within less than 6 years.
So remember, we want to drive home to listeners this morning that everything that's happening with the transportation system is a choice being made for you by government regulation. Every single aspect of these problems within the automotive and transportation industry are choices. They're policies. That's it. There's no way of getting around that. And do you think most Americans have figured that out? Or is it just like, well, it's just happening. Well, it's way more expensive.
Well,
I can't do this now.
Awareness is dawning. And more finally, I think awareness of the maliciousness is dawning. I think more and more people are realizing that the fuel economy thing is a boogeyman. And also that the emissions thing is a boogeyman. I've been beating that horse for decades now, trying to tell people, look, dig into the numbers and you'll find that the differences in tailpipe exhaust emissions between something that was made, say, in 1999 versus something that's made today are fractional. There's really no meaningful difference at all. In other words, mission accomplished, but yet they continue to pretend there's a problem with tailpipe exhaust emissions in order to continue to try to push anything with an engine out of the showroom.
how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, so to speak, when it comes to pollution regulations, right? Well, also the fact that they now consider that the EPA decided to just all of a sudden say, well, carbon dioxide is a pollution.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Carbon dioxide is what runs the CO2 cycle that gives us plants and life on the planet. So how does CO2 be a pollutant, right?
It doesn't. You know, there's so many synergies at work here. 50 years of government education plus have rendered the general population scientifically illiterate. So they are easily convinced that carbon dioxide somehow is a pollutant. You know, they've established that false connection there, which is preposterous. Carbon dioxide, whatever you may think about climate change, has absolutely nothing to do with air pollution, and yet they very, very oleaginously and maliciously try to frame CO2 as essentially the same thing as those unburned hydrocarbons that you would make your eyes water when you stood behind a car that was made back in the 1960s.
Yeah, and I remember that. 1969 Cadillac Coupe DeVille of my father's.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting behind one a number of months ago at a intersection, and you would smell the exhaust, and you could smell a bit of the raw gas that comes out of these old classic cars. And arguably, yeah, they were true polluters at that point. There is a lot of pollution out of that, unburned raw fuel and various other things. We've cleaned that up. That's gone, you know?
For decades.
Yeah. And we're still acting as if, the Cuyahoga River is going to catch on fire if you throw a match in it, like it did.
Yeah, well, these people will never relinquish a power once they've gotten it. You know, look at this business with NATO. The Soviet Union has been gone for, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we still have this alliance that was predicated on the existence of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact.
So bureaucratic inertia, is kind of what we're dealing with. The mission is never over. It's never clean enough. It's never safe enough. And on the other hand, it's never affordable enough these days for many people. And that's a big concern.
And that's what I'm hoping is going to fundamentally result in change here. I think people are going to get fed up, and they're going to ask, why can't I buy a $12,000 basic little economy car that gets 60 miles per gallon? Because they exist, and they're available elsewhere. Why can't I have a car like that?
And by the way, I would go even further there. Let's say you want an electric vehicle, and you're mostly just an in-city commuter car. Why can't I get a $12,000 EV? Because they exist out there. They do.
Well, why can't you get a $5,000 EV? They do exist.
Really? Where do they exist at $5,000?
All over China. Now, these aren't highway EVs, but these are fine. They're basically like an elaborate golf cart. You know, and nothing wrong with that. What if you live in an urban area and you never drive much faster than 35 miles an hour because you can't, but you'd like to have something that will enable you to be able to get there without having to walk or ride a bicycle?
Yeah, go get your groceries, go to go shopping, things like that, be able to take something home. Yeah, exactly. All right. The stuff exists. We're not allowed to buy it. And yet we call ourselves the land of the free. That's got to change. We really have to become the land of the free if we're going to save ourselves here, Eric.
We do. And I think also just getting back to this whole issue of the regulatory apparatus, one of the most necessary reforms is a mandatory requirement of cost-benefit analysis prior to the promulgation of any further regulations. And it has to be, in other words, established as fact that whatever they're saying needs to be done is going to have an objective, demonstrable benefit to people that outweighs the cost.
Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. Hey, Eric, I was going to talk about you. You know, you had reviewed the Camaro, and we had talked about how sad it's going away. But before we take off, what was it like driving it?
Oh, phenomenal. And they didn't send me one with the V8. I had the one with the V6. Now, again, to get back to my owning five Camaros in the past, including three Z28s with 350 V8s, the V6 in the base Camaro makes 335 horsepower, which is as much as the 1970 Z28 solid lifter cammed, highly carbureted, high compression LT1 V8 made.
That was a car that I drooled over when I was a kid in high school. Man. And so,
and 5 seconds to 60, you know, six-speed manual, so, you know, more overdrive gears that my old Z28s didn't have, pretty decent gas mileage, six-speaker stereo, really nice, really fun car, and it just pains me to see the thing being forced off the market.
The last of the Mohicans. What do you got in the driveway for next week, you think, huh?
Well, I'm not sure. Again, I apologize for that. It's either going to be a Mini Countryman, which is the wagon version of the four-door Mini Hatch.
Mm-hmm.
It's either going to be that or the Toyota Land Cruiser, and I can't remember which one comes first.
Boy, the Land Cruiser would be interesting. Is the Land Cruiser still as big as it ever was, or
big, but just not under the hood. You know, Toyota, unfortunately, has retired its brilliant V8 engine for all the same reasons we've been talking about and replaced it with their new twin-turbo V6 engine, which makes plenty of power and tons of torque, but It's a little engine with two turbos, and it's under a lot of pressure.
Hey,
and I'm a little ambivalent about that.
Hey, you know, maybe we could make sense of this regulatory state if all of a sudden, instantly, because you know how progressives are in love with Subarus, and by the way, Subarus are great cars. Mm-hmm. We know about this. What if you just made sure that every Subaru only had EVs in it, everything was short range? Do you think the liberals might wake up and say, "Hey, wait a minute, I don't have enough range now to go out into the into Mother Nature anymore"? Do you think they?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because actually they are realizing it and having second thoughts.
Oh, really?
I came across a very telling stat the other day about current EV owners, and this is all makes and models, and something like 40% of them have said that they will not be buying another EV to replace the one that they've got for precisely that reason, because even progressives don't want to spend a half hour sitting at a sheet to get a charge.
Makes sense to me. All right. But like I say, they have a role within the mix of transportation options, and I would never want to get rid of them because some of these electric cars are absolutely amazing, used for the purpose that they were designed, that they are best suited for, I guess I would say. But
yeah,
not
horses for courses. I mean, people who value high gas mileage, for example, ought to be free to get an ultra lightweight, simple car that gets 60 or 70 miles per gallon. And, you know, people who are very concerned about crashworthiness, which is different from safety, could do as they did once upon a time when we had a free market and buy some big hulking car like a Volvo.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Volvo was the safe car, but not everybody was forced to buy a Volvo?
I know. Volvo marketed themselves as the big safe car. And then it got to the point where everybody was forced to be like Volvo, big and heavy, right?
Yep, and now we don't have any of the other alternatives. Everybody's a Volvo. And by the way, that's why Volvo's in trouble, because what are they trying to sell? Everybody else is selling the same thing.
Hey, it's another crossover SUV, right? That kind of thing.
And very safe.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Eric, great talk as always. Looking forward to it. Read up on epautos.com. epautos.com. Thanks so much. And keep driving out there. And are you driving any motorcycles this time of year out in?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we were out on, not new ones, we were out on one of my old bikes last Saturday, when the attempt was made on the Orange Man.
Have they come after the motorcycle yet when it comes to freedom and the ability to buy a motorcycle? Is that in the...
A little bit, but it's kind of analogous to what the situation was with cars about 20 years ago. Most bikes are now fuel injected, and they're beginning to have things like drive-by-wire and various safety systems on them, like traction control and whatnot. But it's going to be a mopping-up operation. You know, motorcycles are a relatively small segment of the market. Once they deal with cars, then they're going to wheel around and come after bikes.
But arguably, the motorcycle is the freedom vehicle at this point, right?
It's the most essential thing that there is. You know, you can still get a vehicle that gets easily 60 miles per gallon that can carry my touring bike and has bags that you can use to carry things around in. It's very simple, very easy to maintain because you can get at everything. So, you know, it's something that is kind of like what cars were once upon a time when we still lived in a free country.
Yeah. Is there any way that you could get some manufacturers to send you some scooters, some of those scooters for review? You know, the scooters that are kind of inexpensive for the urban areas. I'm wondering if that's any part.
I actually get those occasionally. BMW sent me one of their scooters. This was, it's been like 2 years, I think, since I had one of them. And they're, they're absolutely fine for the intended purpose. Totally serviceable for just knocking around for people who live in an urban or even a suburban setting. It's an affordable way to be able to, just get down to the store, get the things that you need, and get back home again.
Well, let's hope that you're never forced to get the electric bike and review the electric bikes, that all the homeless bums around here in Southern Oregon seem to be popping up with. It's amazing.
Yeah, and they end up throwing them up curbside. That's a business model that's not going to last.
All right, Eric. Hey, we'll talk next week. Thanks so much. Always
good. Bill. Thank you.
Always good conversation and great reading on epautos.com. This is KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford. KBXG Grants Pass. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Rev up your-